Hello and welcome to Let the Stones Speak. My name is Christopher Eames, your host for today's program. And we're coming to you today from Shiloh, Tel Shiloh, the famous biblical location of the tabernacle. I'm standing right now just within the Middle Bronze Age Canaanite wall of the original city here at the site. And just below me is the Favisa area, the sacrifice deposit area for the tabernacle at the time here during the time of the biblical judges. So as usual, every year we like to come to the site and do an interview with the director. The last several times we've done so with Dr. Scott Stripling. This time we'll be doing so with his co-director, Dr. Abigail Van Huss, and she'll be talking to us about the three areas they've been excavating here at Tel Shiloh. Now you'll want to stick through all the way to the end. She talks also a little bit about her recently earned PhD and also a little bit about the war situation and how that's been affecting them here at Shiloh. So as usual, incredible archaeological discoveries that have been made here at this season. We're coming now from the end of the season here, just as they're beginning to wrap up. So these things will be summarized by Dr. Van Huss. So we hope you enjoy today's program. If you're not already, please do subscribe to our free bi-monthly 40-page magazine, Let the Stones Speak, and also like and subscribe to the program again if you haven't already. So without further ado, we hope you enjoy today's program. Dr. Abigail Van Huss, it's a pleasure to be here at Shiloh, Tel Shiloh again.
Yeah, welcome.
Thank you very much. You are the co-director of the site this year. And typically we like to visit and interview Dr. Scott Stripling at the end of each season. We're interviewing you this time around. You've recently received your doctorate. Congratulations
Thank
on
you.
That. And so I want to talk about the site here at Shiloh and the few different areas that you're continuing to excavate. But before that, Kerbet Erafid. What in the world? You are devoted enough to have a warm-up excavation.
Yes.
Before, like, the main excavation.
So it's actually really cool because it's just across the highway from here. And so it's a really good comparison site because whenever Rafid was occupied, Shiloh wasn't. And when Shiloh was occupied, Rafid wasn't. And so it's actually a really interesting contrast site.
So I think this was your season four at Erafid,
yes.
Correct? So what is that site? Like, what periods are we talking over there?
So it's originally an early Bronze Age site, a little bit into the Middle Bronze Age, and then it jumps to late Iron Age and into the Persian period, and then Hellenistic. And so that's pretty much it
okay.
over there.
And so by contrast, you would have this site really taking off in the late Bronze Age, Iron One
it has,
period.
It has a lot of Middle Bronze, but the later Middle Bronze, and then into the late Bronze. And then we have, the Iron One, a little bit of Iron, well, quite a bit of Iron Two. But then when this site gets abandoned, Rafid is reoccupied in the later Iron Two. And so, it seems like people moved back and forth, maybe.
Interesting. So, obviously, Shiloh is mentioned multiple places in the biblical account. Is there any hint of it with Erafid, or it's just one of those sites?
We don't have any biblical identification that we know of yet.
Okay. So, moving to Shiloh here, how has the season gone in general? Has it met with expectations? Has there been surprises? It's gone pretty well.
It's been a great season. It's one of those where our team was a lot smaller than we planned because of uncertainty with flights and everything, but we still had a really good team, got a lot done in our three main areas, and a lot of it was just, continuing and, without major finds, we have a few nice things here and there. We have some storage jars that were really nice that we can talk about, but yeah.
Yeah, sure. So we'll get to that because you've got the three main areas for the past several years.
Yeah.
So correct? That's correct.
Yeah.
The same this year. So let's go through them one by one from, I don't know if I should call it the least interesting to the most. That might be a bit disingenuous, but in any case, let's begin on the north with what you've identified as the northern gate here. What can you tell us in general about that for new people who haven't been following or familiar with it? And then maybe specifically with this season, anything more that's come out about it?
Right. So at Shiloh, the city gate was never found. There have been multiple excavations over the last 100 years, and generally it's thought it should be on the southern side because that's the best approach. But we have uncovered what we think seems to be a gate area, structures outside the city wall, and then the opening going through the city wall. And so we've been working a little at a time. We have rooms, we have columns, or pillars, and so this season we expanded on that. We found continuations of walls, and doing a little just looking at the surface and looking at old excavation reports, we think we've clued in on what the dimensions of the gate structure are, and so we have kind of a good plan for next year to open some new areas and see if we can find that perimeter. So I think there that was the main thing, was kind of plotting out that perimeter and figuring out where we want to tackle next and see what we can find.
Yeah, very good. And what was the period for the gate? Is it like strictly within a single period, or it continues to be used?
So it's definitely originally Middle Bronze Age.
So it fits with the large Middle Bronze wall.
Yes, with the fortification wall that goes all the way around the site. It seems to continue into the Late Bronze Age, and then it's unclear whether it continues into the Iron Age or not. That's something that I think we need to do a little more work to determine that for sure, because I know it's really nice to connect it with Eli sitting in the gate.
Yep.
And I think Scott might tell you that it is. For me, I'm not sure yet.
Okay.
But
Shiloh's gate is interesting from a biblical standpoint. Mm-hmm. Also from the Amana letters.
Yes.
I think it talks a little bit about even the death of someone in the gate.
Exactly.
Is that correct?
Yes.
So it's like the Shiloh Gatehouse. Mm-hmm. There's something about it. Maybe it's a cursed place or
who knows,
or something.
But yes, the Amarna letters talk about, I think, two people being killed in the gate of Silu, which we equate with Shiloh.
Mm-hmm.
And so, not a good place to be, maybe.
Yeah, ultimately culminating with Eli, the priest, the high priest.
Well, it goes beyond that, because the Danish excavator got sick while excavating in that area, and he ultimately died.
Wow, okay.
So
for the superstitious people out there, you might want to stay away from that area.
Yeah.
Hopefully people excavating in that square have counted the cost.
They seem to be all right.
Very good. So moving around, mm-hmm. So we'll go from the north to the east side, mm-hmm. We have the Favisa.
Yes.
So again, for people unfamiliar, maybe just explain what a Favisa is, mm-hmm. and then in general what the area is, and more specifically this season.
Yeah, so a Favisa is basically a sacred trash pile. So when you have a system of worship and sacrifice, you're going to end up with animal bones, you're going to end up with a lot of ash, you're going to end up with offerings that people brought. Say they bring maybe a bowl of grain as an offering. The bowl is part of the offering, but it's not like the priests need, you know, hundreds and hundreds of dishes. So you break it to show you've offered it to God, you're not going to use it anymore. And so that's what we're finding over there, is animal bones, broken dishes, very nice ones, a lot of gold and silver jewelry that we assume would be offerings as well. And so we've been working there for several seasons, digging through that Favisa, and now we're actually underneath it. And so we're discovering what's under the Favisa, and that is where they found the storage jars this season, three very large restorable jars. And our botanist has been working on this, and so we know what was in all three of the jars now.
Can you reveal?
Yes. So the first one was easy. We knew right away it was olives, because it was full of hundreds of olive pits.
Wow.
All burned. So all the contents of these jars were burned. So that's interesting. The second one had lentils in it, and the third one had wheat.
Wow.
So it's very nice, a very nice collection of the diet of that time period.
I saw some news reporting on mm-hmm. it. I think it was Jewish News Syndicate had an article mm-hmm. on it. And just so people know, like, this is incredible. This is like mm-hmm. over 3,500 years old, or
yes.
somewhere in that ballpark.
Somewhere in that neighborhood.
Like the diet of people mm-hmm. captured in a moment from
yes.
so early on. It's really incredible. And to be able to have those preserved remains within a snapshot of what was being consumed or used mm-hmm. at that time period. It's really amazing. In past excavations, Scott's mentioned a number of gold items that mm-hmm. were found there, ritual deposits of these like gold mm-hmm. stars or something like that, including one with a face on it.
Yes.
Has that been released yet? or there was some promise?
Not that I know of. There was an article that either came out or is coming. I think it came out. I don't know if it included the one with the face or if we found that one. I'd have to check on see if it's in that article or not.
Sort of like a miniature face of Agamemnon type
something
thing.
Gold item.
Really exciting. So we were looking forward to that coming out. So I can't remember if it's come out yet or not.
Yeah, but I can't remember either.
So any more special items like that, like scarabs or gold
no,
items?
No, sadly we're below that level now. Okay. So so we'll have to content ourselves with jars of food.
Yeah. And now to the what I think is possibly the most exciting area, the one we're standing in here. What is this area? What do you think it could be? I guess not necessarily proven yet or anything. What can you tell us about this building here?
Okay, so this is what we're calling the monumental building, which is a pretty generic term because it's big, it's monumental, it's a building. It's too big to be like a private home or something. This is certainly community architecture. And it's a long, narrow building running east-west.
Exactly. Like if you look on a map, it is...
Very much east-west as the dividing wall that seems to give it a one-third, two-third division. And so right away, this reminds us of the tabernacle or the temple. And when we read the Bible and Jewish sources, we see that... There are a lot of hints that at Shiloh they actually built a stone building for the tabernacle. And so that's kind of our hope and our hypothesis is, could this be the tabernacle building? It's from the right time period. It's oriented. It's got the right dimensions. And so we have focused a lot of work here trying to figure out, you know, exactly where the walls go. There's, as you can see, there's a lot of walls in here. And so not all of them are original. And so a lot of what we've been doing is trying to figure out which ones came first and second, and there seems to be multiple remodels to this building. And so this season, I think the biggest thing that we did this season is we found a piece of the southern wall, which is the one that's been elusive. And so now that helps us to really map out for sure what the dimensions are, because that was the uncertain part is where that southern wall was. We thought we had the corner here, but then we never found anything. So it seems that this may be just a piece of another wall coming off and that the corner is actually deeper in than we thought before. And so,
So back when we were discussing it earlier, that was kind of like, seems like the make or break thing. Mm-hmm. Like wherever the southern wall is, will decide if this really is like the layout, because you have a very nice northern wall. You've got a nice dividing wall here. This would be effectively the southern wall of the Holy of Holies.
The western wall
of the Holy of Holies where we're standing.
Where we're standing here, yeah.
Just kind of blows
it's
the
incredible
mind.
Incredible to think about that. So I know Tim is our guy who does a lot of the architecture stuff, so he's excited. He's already been plotting it on the map to see how that wall that we found lines up, because there's a few different ways to like calculate it. Like, do you do the interior dimensions, the exterior dimensions? Do you measure it from the middle of the wall? And so he's really excited to see how that wall lines up and whether it gives us our proper dimensions or not.
Yeah. So I guess my assumption, and probably most people's assumption, when you read of the tabernacle at Shiloh, you think of the tabernacle and like there would be nothing left of it apart from maybe some holes in the bedrock where it was kind of secured down.
Right.
But like you say, and Scott was talking about this in the past, Dr. Stripling, that some of the biblical clues speak of a more quasi-permanent structure at Shiloh, some of the Hebrew words, and then some of the Talmudic references are quite strikingly direct, like in saying that the tabernacle at Shiloh was a stone structure with the original tabernacle covering the roof.
Yes. So I still wouldn't say for sure that this is it, but I think it's a really strong possibility. One thing that, you know, you think about is if this isn't the tabernacle, why is there this huge monumental building from that time period? What else would it be? Which we really don't have anything else that it would be. So, I don't know. I like it. We got to keep digging and we've got to see what we find, but I think it's exciting.
That's the attitude to have with it, not to lock in straight away. But I would certainly say, comparing the times we've come in the past, mm-hmm. like the case is accumulating. It's not being disproven. We're gradually seeing that evidence. Yeah. So that's really exciting. So speaking of the site in general, mm-hmm. are you getting any better resolution with the dating, like of this as the cultic center for the Israelites? Mm-hmm. I know when Professor Israel Finkelstein was excavating here, mm-hmm. he saw things like the Favisa as a Canaanite cult that started around 1500 mm-hmm. plus or minus. You've got all the way through to ideas about a later date for the mm-hmm. Exodus and conquest and mm-hmm. the 1200s, 1100s. Scott obviously preferring the earlier time frame, mm-hmm. Seeing kind of a transition point around 1400 plus or minus. So have you been able to get more of a resolution to the dates, either for the Favisa or for this structure here?
Yeah, for the Favisa, we have carbon dates. We were able to take some of the animal bones mm-hmm. and get carbon dates from them. And they date very nicely in the late Bronze Age 2B. Which is later than Finkelstein dated that deposit. And so mm-hmm. that really helps us to understand it better. And it's nice for us because it does put it within that window of the tabernacle.
Yeah.
And so we actually have a lot more samples. We've been backlogged because we had to get permits for getting the samples out, and it was a whole red tape thing. But we finally have the permits. So this year we should have a lot more data in carbon 14 samples coming out once we get those back to the US and get them tested. I don't think we have anything new on this building yet, hopefully in the batch that we're taking for testing.
Yep. Okay, so transitioning a little bit, you're aware of the news as much as we are, and there's mm-hmm. been the whole conflict with Iran going on. Mm-hmm. Some of our listeners might not realize this, but I think it was just one or two days after we taped the program here mm-hmm. that everything blew up. And there was a lot of drama for us and some of our friends who are mm-hmm. Part of a dance troupe, the Celtic Throne Troupe. They were leaving through Sinai mm-hmm. to get out and continue their tour to England.
Yeah.
We were joking at the time that it's like a reverse exodus.
Yes.
Much the same thing was happening for you
guys.
Yes,
so our team also did the reverse exodus. We took a bus down to the southern border, crossed the border there, took a bus across the Sinai and flew out of Cairo. So,
yours sounds
exciting.
A little bit more interesting. Like you actually went all the way across. Some of our friends mm-hmm. went down to the southern Sinai and flew out of there.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But I was seeing pictures from some of your crew. Were mm-hmm. you there as well at the Egyptian Museum, the pyramids?
Yeah. So my husband and I were only there for a half day before we flew out. So we skipped the pyramids. We went to the Grand Egyptian Museum and got to see that. They hadn't even had their official grand opening yet,
wow.
but they were open. And so we were able to see a lot of the stuff. So
amazing.
That was, on our list of things we really wanted to do someday. And so we were forced into it and we were like, this is great. And then because of the way our tickets were messed up, we ended up going to London and we got to see the British Museum too. So it was just a lot of fun.
It's a museum world tour.
Yes.
That sounds awesome. So this season, mm-hmm. there was recently a little, there's been the ongoing situation, mm-hmm. but we did have sirens.
Was it last week?
Last week, I think. Mm-hmm. Did that affect you guys at all? Did it put a pause on?
No, we were already out at the site when the sirens started going, and so we just waited it out. And since things calmed down again, we didn't have to shut down.
Yeah, okay, great. Transitioning again to another mm-hmm. subject. You recently got your PhD. Again, congratulations mm-hmm. on that. What was that through? That was through Ariel?
Ariel University, yeah.
University. So are you able to talk a little bit about what your dissertation was on?
Yeah.
Or how that process was for you?
Yeah. So my dissertation is on the transition from the Late Bronze Age to the Iron Age in the Central Hill Country. So Shiloh here is one of the sites that I dealt with. And I was looking a lot at the pottery and then at the settlement patterns. And so what I wanted to see is how that transition happened. Because I put the Exodus and conquest in the earlier part of the Late Bronze Age, really what I was looking at would be post-conquest, but would be during like the settlement period of the Israelites. And so I did find some interesting things. I was able to plot the settlement and maybe add to the conversation on whether there's a directionality to it, because some people said, well, it was, you know, the peaceful infiltration and not a conquest, and you can see them moving across. And I did not find that. It was just kind of towns popping up everywhere at the same time. Another thing is that I was able to show that the settlement actually started in the late Bronze Age 2B and not in the Iron Age 1A. I mean, it just, you know, exploded in the Iron Age 1A, but you
see... That's what you usually hear.
Right. That, yeah. But I was able to show that there were twice as many sites in the late Bronze Age 2B as there were in the late Bronze 2A. And so already there's an increase at that period. So I think that was really important part of my research as well.
So will that be available in some form in future, in articles? Or
my plan
because it was 700 pages, right?
Yes, it was 700 pages. Yeah. So my plan is to compress that a little bit and get it into book form. But I am hoping, I've got one article published, and I'm hoping to get a few more articles out of it as well.
And you've got at least one book published, is that correct, on Mount Ebal?
Yes, my master's thesis on Mount Ebal I got published in book form.
Okay, great. So finally, is there any way people can follow your work? Any website that you have or anything you can direct people to?
Yeah, I keep a blog, at least when I'm over here doing stuff. It's called abigailsarchaeologicaladventures.wordpress.com. And yes, I try to put out a weekly blog post when I'm over here in the land.
And plans for the future for you? Now that you've got your PhD, will you be leading excavations?
Well, actually, we have some exciting developments, because now that I've finished mine, my husband is planning to start his. So we're actually hoping to move here in the fall, and we'll be here for 4 years. And so I haven't quite decided what I'm doing. I'm thinking about maybe a postdoc, maybe just do some writing that I want to do. We'll see.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Van Haas. It's always a pleasure to come here. It's surreal to be at Shiloh itself, let alone in the possible structure that we're in right now.
Yeah,
so I appreciate it as always. And until next time.
Until next time.